Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio, a service of Close Up Television and Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here on the show, and we thank you very much for making us a part of your day. We're excited to welcome a brand new guest here on the program, Dr. Janet Allen. She's a National Board Certified Counselor and sole owner of Creekside Counseling, an independent-owned facility where she employs a staff of 15 outstanding professionals. In addition, she's a top-notch sex addiction therapist, as well as certified life coach and yoga instructor, as well as EMDR certified. You know, she says mental health provides really providers the opportunity to operate with an element of humility. They're not about telling you what to do, but rather help you learn to solve any problems you're struggling with. Dr. Allen says all human beings possess the resilience and the capability to move through one's issues and to come out potentially better for the experience. Creekside Counseling is a place of confidentiality, a non-judgmental environment, coupled with Dr. Allen's warm, direct, and compassionate approach. She says it's the process of talking and connected with one another that allows you to be able to tap into our intuition and clarify our own value system. Seeing a therapist is not an admission of inadequacies, but rather a gesture towards promoting one's own health and wellness. And in these unprecedented times of COVID, which exacerbates the loneliness, so epidemic is in our society of loneliness, people are seeking help, and it's really important to do that. It's imperative now more than ever. Most recently, Dr. Allen has focused her attention on treating first responders, helping them effectively manage stress and be dedicated to helping our officers who put their own lives at risk for the sake of others. For Dr. Allen, what matters most in this world are really having healthy relationships, whether it's with ourselves, the planet, our partners, anything that has any significance and serves to support those fundamental connections. Again, she is with Creekside Counseling, which is based in Idaho Falls, Idaho, an independent-owned facility, again, where she employs a staff of 15 outstanding professionals. And again, she's a top-notch sex addiction therapist, certified life coach, yoga instructor, and is EMDR certified. And it's my pleasure to welcome her to Close Up Radio today for our exclusive one-on-one conversation on the broadcast. Dr. Allen, thank you very much for joining us today. It's a pleasure and an honor to have you. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. It's quite a privilege to be here and to talk about a subject that's so near and dear to my heart.
Well, you are very welcome, and it's imperative, and it's very important, and it's rather topical, too, again, with all that's going on and that we've been experiencing, some of which you and I were talking about before we went even live on the air. Let's talk about some of the things early in your career and your life's journey, Doctor, that inspired you to want to go into counseling and helping others.
You know, it's kind of a unique story, but when I was an adolescent, first of all, I was friendly and engaging and a fairly approachable person, and I had friends that would come to me and want to talk, and my mom did once say with a kind of a wink in her eye that if I was smart one day, I would get paid for this because I just spent a lot of time supporting, you know, friends and people I cared about through various struggles in their life. But the real pivotal moment came for me when I was wrapping up the end of my junior year in high school. I was really active in a lot of extracurricular activities, sports and choir, and took private voice lessons and just being really communicative by nature, I had unwittingly abused my voice and became more and more raspy, and over time could hardly talk at all. And so my mom took me to a ear, nose, and throat specialist. They diagnosed me with vocal nodules, and this doctor said, you know, it's pretty grim. This is really severe, and you have a couple of choices. You can either, you know, subject your vocal cords to surgery, and if I nick your vocal cords, you will lose your ability to communicate, or you can just be quiet, and I mean silent, for 6 weeks, and maybe those vocal cords will heal on their own. And so by this time I was entering into my senior year, and I was the captain of the volleyball team, and I had been voted class clown. I had a role, you know, I was supposed to be engaging and make people laugh and be the center of attention, and all of that collapsed in around me when I just couldn't talk. I struggled to be able to do that on my own, and so I went to a hypnotherapist, and he gave me the wherewithal to really be peaceful in my silence. And so, long story short, 6 weeks of silence left me feeling very isolated and marginalized, and I would even say invisible. I didn't exist anymore in my mind's eye to this very important peer group that I thought I was so vital to, and I became just this observer, this detached, lonely observer watching life pass me by. And so the good news, the positive part of this whole story is my vocal cords did heal on their own very organically, but that isolation and loneliness triggered a depression that lasted for months and an eating disorder that I struggled with for a couple of years. And with all of that, really gained an appreciation that mental health issues can impact anybody, that nobody is immune, and that really our natural disposition is to connect with other people. And when we are disconnected for whatever reason, whether it's a pandemic or depression, or you're an only child and you don't have siblings, or you're shy and you don't know how to socialize, I think loneliness is a disease process in and of itself, and so I gained such an appreciation for how vital it is that we always have someone to talk to. And so that was probably foundational for me in choosing a career in mental health.
What a great path. What a terrific path that has led you to this extraordinary work. How do you define your work as a mental health professional? No, that's a broad question.
It is, and it's a wonderful question. I imagine if you ask different mental health professionals, they might give you a different answer. But for me, it is a whole person experience that, as a mental health professional, we focus on behavior. We focus on emotions, fear, guilt, shame, helping people heal from those pervasive feelings of defectiveness. We focus on relationships, the change process, helping people find a sense of meaning and purpose in their life, that it really is kind of this facilitated process that promotes healing, clarity, change, growth, and ultimately, I think it's about becoming. And I would say our primary objective in life really is to evolve into the better version of ourselves. And I don't know that we do that without mirrors and reflection and people in our life who can provide feedback. And so counseling is kind of this very special, unique setting where it's confidential and it's focused and it's intimate, and it allows people to explore their lives in a way that I don't know they would or could otherwise.
That's wonderful the way you describe that, and it's obviously a passion of yours and in your DNA from those early inspiring moments that got you to realize this is work that you're meant and destined to do. Why would you say, doctor, it is ideal, really, it's important to seek therapy rather than advice from our friends and family and try to manage, you know, the symptoms. Sometimes we try to manage our own symptoms on our own. Sometimes we go to the family and friends. I would imagine the family and friends, though they might be loving and try to guide you, there can be judgment. They could have you already boxed or sized up. Oh, well, you know, Judy's always been like that, or Judy's always going to respond right. that way. And there's biases attached. But when somebody comes to you, there's no judgment. There's no biases. There's no baggage. It's fresh. And it's like a whole new approach. And there's trust that's created between you and that client. And all of that is very important, right? It's an unbiased look at what the issues happen to be, right?
Yeah, and I think really what you just described is tied to the freedom that people feel, because in the absence of judgment or a fear that someone's going to share their most sacred secrets, that if they have the wherewithal to just kind of open their mind and their heart and talk authentically and unguardedly about their lives' experiences, maybe there's trauma, maybe they're confronting some difficult decisions, some regrets, maybe they feel somehow paralyzed. If they can just begin the process of sharing, we can dig deep into those issues where otherwise people won't, because if their walls are up and their masks are on, and I think we all, you know, use walls and masks for various reasons, but all of that comes off in the therapeutic environment, and sometimes people are able to get to know themselves in ways they wouldn't otherwise be able to. I think that counseling is truly unique in that we have both the clinician and the client who make this implicit agreement that we're just going to talk and focus about you. And where else can we replicate that? You know, if you talk to your friends, it's all about relatability. I tell a story, you tell a story. I share an experience, you reciprocate with something on your own. I open up, tell you what I'm thinking, you tell me why that's a bad idea. And that is absent in the therapeutic realm, because a skilled provider understands that we're really going to focus on you, and we're not going to jump ahead to advice giving or quick fixes. It's a really, I almost want to say indulgent, but in the most positive sense, that a person gets to indulge themselves in this time and space to really explore the depths of their soul, and it's so profoundly rewarding.
Mm. Yeah, I would absolutely imagine. Is the stigma surrounding mental health still a reason why people don't reach out to get help? And that quote-unquote stigma, is it loosening? Is it softening? Is it reducing as mental health has been in the dialogue and the conversation, I'd say, in the last couple of years, much more so than it has previously? It was more
right.
swept under the rug, and, oh, we don't talk about those things. Don't, you know, pull down the shades. Don't let the neighbors know. Now people are talking a little bit more openly about it. Is that stigma still there, and is it still a block for some people?
So I think the stigma is fading. And yes, I think there's still some resistance. I think the primary issue is people are afraid of becoming vulnerable because they don't want to be judged, and they also don't want to have their complex life issues reduced to a cliche or an assignment. I think they have some misguided notions that are maybe reinforced through media, sitcoms, movies. You know, often the psychologist is the wacky one, or they have bad boundaries, or and it's sad that we have to contend with that. But I think we are making inroads. And just as an illustration, when I started my work as a mental health counselor over 30 years ago, women were the primary consumers of mental health services. They were the ones that picked up the phone, made the call, showed up to the appointment, and I do a lot of couples counseling, and it was just more often the case that, you know, they were kind of dragging their spouses in with them who were reluctant to come. And now, 30 years later, at least 50% of my clients are men, and when a client calls for couples counseling, it's just as likely that that caller will be the male partner versus the female partner. I really think that it's becoming more the idea that counseling is an investment in self rather than this indicator that I'm weak and hapless and I need someone else to figure out my life.
Mm, yeah, exactly. And beautifully said. Why has working with, I probably know the answer to this, but for our audience's edification, why has working with first responders become a major focus of your life's work? And
so
kudos to you, and hats off not only to the first responders who are doing yeoman's work, but to you caring for them, because they really need that support and that reassurance and what you're providing. So thanks for you doing this as well for the first responders.
Well, first of all, thank you for that acknowledgement. It is really with genuine appreciation and gratefulness that I have the opportunity to work with this very unique population. You know, first responders includes law enforcement, fire, EMS, ambulance. I mean, it's the whole gamut, you know, sheriff's offices, et cetera. They really are the people who show up for us at our worst moments, when we're in the most dangerous situations, and we need them. And we need them to be grounded and clear-minded and physically and emotionally well and solid, not only in their tactical skills, but in their judgment, because they have to make critical decisions that have life and death consequences. And so who is it that shows up for the people who show up for us? And I have really wanted my clinic especially to be their go-to place for mental and emotional support. It is a hard nut to crack. This first responder culture, they are our heroes and our warriors. They really see themselves as the helpers, not the ones who ever need to be helped. And so the fact that we're making some inroads is nothing short of a miracle. They have high risk when it comes to depression, addiction, anxiety, PTSD especially. You think about how we don't necessarily catch mental illness, right? We don't catch it necessarily from our environment or from our relationships, although those things can produce stress. But first responders can catch, as it were, post-traumatic stress disorder because of all of the secondary trauma that they're exposed to that is by necessity a part of their job. And so, frankly, it should be part of workman's comp. I mean, if you do this work, then ideally they would be assigned a counselor of their choice that just helps them continue to reset and find their resilience, or we're going to, you know, find a huge percentage of our first responders who are compromised.
Exactly right, and that's not what we want to have happen.
No.
Yeah. Tell us about your work with EMDR, and if you can define EMDR for the audience in case they're not familiar with it, what it actually is and how it works and how you work with it.
So EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It is, as far as I'm concerned, a really important tool in the therapeutic toolkit. Now, there are some EMDR providers who this is their sole modality. This is what they do. And for me, it just is an option. It's something that is effective, but I'm a generalist, and I work with virtually anybody who walks in the front door. And not everybody is open to EMDR. But I'll tell you, what I have found is that not only is it effective but it's efficient. Sometimes in a single session, which might last between 50 and 60 minutes, we might be able to resolve a significant traumatic event, which you probably wouldn't be able to do in a traditional talk therapy session. And so the way I try to explain it to people is if you imagine, you know, when you eat food, it moves through your digestive system and your body pulls what's useful in the way of nutrients, and then it releases the rest, right? And if all goes according to plan, it's a pretty efficient process that nobody really has to think about. Well, your brain is busy processing all of your life's experiences, the good, the bad, and the ugly. If it's hard, your brain on a good day is just moving through that. And we know that sleep is where our brain is actively involved in digesting emotionally intense experiences. And when we sleep, we move into a state called REM. Rapid eye movement is a phase of sleep, right? And the body is processing and extracting those lessons and releasing the experience, the emotional intensity, and you can wake up and be pretty resolved regarding what happened the day before. And our nighttime sleep is so vital to our emotional and psychological wellness, which is another reason why first responders are at risk, because they don't sleep a lot, they work these crazy schedules. Well, when we have significant trauma, our brain can store that differently and struggle to digest it. So if you get back to the log jam analogy, you know, these logs are moving down a river and they're just flowing forward and all is right with the world. But if one of those logs gets crosswise, it can really create a jam where those logs get stacked up. Well, and then nothing moves. And so people need to be able to move through their experiences, but sometimes they get stuck in their experiences. The trauma of the car accident, or the trauma of that untimely death, or the medical procedure that went awry, it's past them, but they are not past it. The emotional intensity lives within them, and EMDR activates bilateral stimulation, introduces a technique to the brain that the brain already understands, and rather quickly, the brain can kind of release that stored energy, and not only do people feel like the emotional intensity is resolved, they return to a place of neutrality, but the negative beliefs that were kind of sandwiched in those intense emotions gets released as well, and so they no longer feel like they're going to die, or they no longer feel like they're worthless, or they no longer feel like life has no purpose. It is not only a shift in how people feel, but it's a shift, almost an instantaneous shift, in how people think and believe. And the whole notion is tied to the idea that your body is designed to heal. It does that really well on its own. Sometimes it requires some assistance. And so we use this technique that the brain came up with on its own. I mean, we've been engaged in rapid eye movement probably for thousands of years unknowingly, because it occurs when we are sleeping.
Right, exactly. And it's very important that we it happens, because lack of sleep, as we know, has its own detrimental health effects over time. It's even been tied to dementia, Alzheimer's, a lot of
things,
realizing.
And weight gain, and I mean, all kinds of things.
Yeah, mood swings, all of it, and even cardiovascular issues.
Yep.
What prompted you, and there's a lot of people who have been saying they're having a lot of trouble with getting sleep. This year in 2020, with everything going on, there's a lot of insomnia, there's a lot of fear, worry that's occurring. And I even have a lot of friends that are saying they're having trouble just going to sleep because their mind is racing about what's going on with the monumental nature of all of the big things that are happening in our lives right now. Pandemic, economic, civil unrest, elections, just all these things that are all at the same time. And there's a lot of people that are not getting the sleep right now that is needed, and they're operating on you know, fumes pretty much. So it's important to try to get sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And another reason why, you know, contacting you is a great benefit. What also prompted you to focus on things like pornography and sex addiction treatment?
So I have been involved in the treatment of compulsive sexual acting out behavior for about 15, maybe 17 years. And that includes pornography, compulsive masturbation, serial acting out with multiple partners, that kind of thing. It was not really a professional interest of mine until I built Creekside, started hiring various providers. And one of my providers was particularly interested in becoming a sex addiction specialist. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I'll go with you. I'll get the training and I'll work with the partners. Because, you know, if you're a sex addict and you happen to be married, you've got a partner who's suffering from betrayal trauma, which is another form of PTSD. Looks like it, it's just so devastating to find that the person you trust the most has betrayed you. And so I thought that I would work with the partners and my colleague would work with the addicts. And then we both went through this training and she took a job in New Jersey. And I'm like, wow, I'm either going to have to do this on my own or drop it and focus on other things. And it just was apparent to me that just like COVID is epidemic in our society, so is pornography and sex addiction. There are those experts who speculate that about one-third of the Internet is pornography. And we see all these kids, you know, with their smartphones, and there's about 100% likelihood that they're going to encounter pretty disturbing graphic images. And it's like that accident on the side of the freeway where you can't look, but you can't not look. And so
you could be going to a regular website.
Right.
Takes you to a whole other site that you were not intending to go to. Yeah.
Exactly. And so by the time these folks, and in my practice they're typically male, but not, I mean, obviously not always, but those are the people who most often present themselves, and I think it's at the insistence of their partners. But, you know, they have been living a double life for years and years and years, and it goes back to early exposure and generally traumatic experiences in their childhood. And so when I became trained and got to know this population, there's just so much guilt and shame. And when we have the tools and we know how to treat that, we can impart that information and support to people who are now in a position to rebuild their lives. Again, it's really personally and professionally gratifying to see that transformation take place. But it is difficult. You can steer clear of alcohol and drugs and tobacco, but sex, you know, you learn to live with. And so it's a return to healthy sexual practices versus abstaining from all those things that might be challenging. And but anyway, it really has been a very fulfilling experience. And I have several here at Creekside who help me run groups and provide the couples counseling, individual counseling, et cetera.
Our time is getting limited here. Hopefully we can have you back and maybe we can hear some success stories, things of that nature. But how have you been dealing with COVID-19 and your clients coping as well? I'm sure you're very, very busy with trying to help people through it all while you're, you know, figuring it out as well.
Well, I think that it's been mixed. You know, we have people here who don't believe it, that it's a hoax. We have people in our community who have lost loved ones. We've got, you know, a significant portion of the population not wearing masks, others who are committed mask wearers. I mean, it's a little bit surreal, but I think at the end of the day, people collectively are feeling the impact because life as we know it has been disrupted. And if we go full circle back to my story of being isolated and lonely, you know, loneliness is not good for the human spirit. And there's, you know, evidence that about 1 in 3 people surveyed in the United States report being lonely. And so you put a pandemic on top of our natural tendency to kind of isolate and withhold, and now we have this imposed reality where people are highly encouraged not to hug or hold hands or sit close or attend parties and gatherings. And I think we'll be spending a few years coming out of this, psychologically speaking.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You can't even go to visit the grandmother who's ill in a nursing home, or if somebody's on a ventilator, you can't even go to say goodbye if that's the situation.
Funerals, weddings.
Christmas, Thanksgiving coming
up. Exactly.
What do? You fly? You know, there's a lot of, so many important variables, and it's unlike anything we've ever thought we'd be experiencing in our lifetime, but it's here. Your work as a life coach, tell us about that, and how is your coaching also different from therapy?
Well, I think therapy has elements of coaching. We are educators, we're mentors, we feel like intimate friends because people will tell us things they'd never tell their best buddy, even because of that shame factor. I think coaching is more goal-oriented. I think it's more aspirational. What do you want to be? Where do you when do you want to hit this marker? It's a lot about motivation and getting really specific about building healthy habits. I think it's more directive. Counseling is a therapeutic experience where a primary emphasis is on healing. It's addressing the past, the present, the future, all aspects of a human's life, spiritual, emotional, mental, behavioral, social. And so I think that the best counseling draws on coaching techniques, but most coaches are not trained in the therapeutic process. And so I would say they have a more structured, more concrete journey, but still can very much produce desired results.
Absolutely. You also are a certified yoga instructor, too.
I am. It's really fun.
Yeah, that I would imagine. Natural healing is important, right?
Mm-hmm. I was scheduled to take a course last August to become certified in yoga for first responders, and then it was canceled due to COVID. But my primary interest in doing yoga is bringing yoga to first responders who it is uniquely suited to, because it's all about mindfulness, being present, focusing on breath work. It's a whole person experience, and first responders need to be very present to the work that they do, in addition to the core strength, flexibility, balance that yoga brings as just a byproduct of the practice. But it really is kind of considered more of a spiritual practice with physical benefits versus a physical exercise activity.
Are there any workshops or presentations coming up that folks can be a part of? And I would imagine you're doing a lot over virtual and online and Zoom and other types of technology, huh?
Well, counseling is available online through Creekside and in person because we can maintain 6 feet or more social distancing. It was interesting when we gave people that option, they ran back to the office because I think they want to see and be seen. They want to hear and be heard. You know, screen counseling is pretty unidimensional. You know, you just see this flat surface, but you get a person in your office, and you can see if their foot is twitching or if, you know, they're moving in various ways that suggest something that they're not saying. And so, yeah, we have both options. And my professional eggs right now are being invested in our local first responders. And we have a contract that just got approved by the city council that's going to make city funds available for all of those first responders to be able to come in to get therapy. And so things are really moving here locally, and we're hoping to be kind of an example or even set the standard for the rest of the country. We want this to be a trend.
Absolutely. The folks can go to www.creeksidecounselingidaho.com, creeksidecounselingidaho.com, to learn more and to connect with Dr. Janet Allen, our very special guest here on Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure having you here, Dr. Allen, and I hope we get a chance to explore some more. That would be an honor and a privilege. And thanks for all the work that you do, because I know you're helping others in such a deep, meaningful, long-lasting way, but I also know that it brings you great joy to do this work, you great blessing to do this work, knowing that you're helping people through some of the idiosyncrasies of daily living that can come at us in so many different ways, shapes, and forms. And guidance from folks like you is not only essential, but it's imperative and very important. So thanks for sharing this time with me as my special guest, and I hope we do get a chance to explore some more down the line. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim. It was my pleasure. I sure appreciate it.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. And boy, the potatoes from Idaho are some of the best.
Yes, they
I'm
are.
A potato guy.
And we are
the
proud.
Irish in me. The Irish in me loves those mashed potatoes.
That's awesome.
That's so a good reason to get yourself to Idaho, folks.
Exactly. Well,
you
thank
take
you
care.
Again. Okay.
Oh, my pleasure.
Care.
My pleasure. Have a great day. Okay.
Thank All
you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We thank our very special guest, Dr. Janet Allen, again, of Creekside Counseling. She's a National Board Certified Counselor, sole owner of Creekside Counseling, an independent-owned facility where she employs a staff of 15 outstanding professionals. In addition, she's a top-notch sex addiction therapist. We talked a little bit about that today. Certified life coach and yoga instructor and EMDR certified as well. Creekside Counseling Idaho.com is the website to make contact. This is your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time. This time till next time. Stay tuned. I will be back in less than 30 minutes with another amazing guest we celebrate from around the world right here for you on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, thanks for joining us. Be well, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.